KALW.
I was trying my best to look calm, but my heart was pounding like an 808 kick drum. I could hear it like I was in an old-fashioned blazer with 15-inch woofers in it.
At San Quentin, Nate McKinney got what he was dreaming about for decades, parole.
I think that what most people can identify with, it's like the night before Christmas, if you're a kid, you know, and you want a present. And that present to me is freedom.
Nate and the host of the KALW podcast, Uncuffed, talk about what it's like to spend your life hoping to be free.
There's a certain point when, like, hoping becomes a scary thing. I began getting scared to hope for freedom because of all the letdowns that I've experienced in my own fight for freedom.
That's coming up. I'm Suni Khalid, in for Hana Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today's show is brought to you from Uncuffed, the KALW podcast recorded and produced inside California prisons. The conversation you're about to hear first aired in November. Earlier this summer, it took first place as the best interview podcast in the 2022 Public Media Journalism Awards. So to celebrate, we're giving it another listen. From Uncuffed, this is the award-winning episode, Nate's Going Home. When an incarcerated person in a California state prison is released, they come out into the free world on parole, a supervised program with strict rules and regulations. If you're serving a potential life sentence, say 25 years to life, you can be found suitable for parole if a board determines that you are ready to, quote, re-enter society. After 20 years of incarceration, that's what happened to Uncuffed producer Nate McKinney. Today, we'll hear from Nate and the other producers at San Quentin about what it means to get parole and what it takes to be found suitable.
Welcome back to Uncuffed, coming live out of the San Quentin side. We got a few fellas in the room right now. Let's start to my right, man. Introduce yourself.
My name is Nate McKinney.
Oh, yeah, A plus Nate, back in effect. Go ahead.
You got Edmund Richardson here.
And Tommy Shakur Ross.
Shakur Ross. And this is Tan Tran. I just want to say I love my job. God, we get to do what we love down here, really talking and really sharing experiences. And we here today for one of our greatest of all time, A-plus, golden standard, Nathan McKinney. Come on, y'all.
Nate the Great.
Everybody snap it up. Snap it up. You receive that? Nate, go ahead, man. I know you got some news for the people.
Well, just recently, last month, as a matter of fact, about 30 days ago, I was found suitable.
What does suitable mean? Hold on.
Suitable means that I no longer present a risk to public safety, you know, in terminology-wise.
So for those who don't know, if you are sentenced to life in prison in California, you have to go through a board of parole. And if you get found suitable, what that means is that you have a chance of coming home. Nate, tell us what the process looks like.
I think that what most people can identify with, it's like the night before Christmas, if you're a kid, you know, and you want a present. And that present to me is freedom and that suitability. And it's hard to sleep. It's hard to reconcile the peace of mind with the anxiety attacks that I was having, you know, to use the I statement. I had to address issues that needed to be addressed, and I don't know how they were going to be received. I'm going to have to explain or connect the dots of what happened to me on that particular day that I committed the life crime and where I'm at now and what brought me to the point where I had hurt people.
Was there any like rituals or something that you did that night or that morning? Did you pray? That, you know, some people got their pocket Bible. Did you got anything shaking for you?
I think that I was drawing on my support system. I have family members that were in my corner. They said they were praying for me. And it was evident I had to pray for myself.
Okay.
But for the most part, it was just filled with the taboo, the unknown, not knowing what's going to happen. Is all this for naught? You know what I mean? But once again, I felt reassured by listening to people that were on my side.
Absolutely, absolutely. Man, just hearing Nate's story, like, what's coming up for y'all over here, man? I see Shakur shaking his head. Emmons looking lost like he always looks, you know? So what's coming up for you, Shakur?
I can definitely relate to your story, his story, because I've went to the board in 2016, and I got a 7-year denial. Mm. So I definitely can relate to the anxiety. I definitely can relate to sitting, you know, in a holding cell and wait for them to call my name so I can go in with the anxiety and the not knowing, you know.
I like that a lot. Ed, what was coming up for you, man, just hearing about Nate the Great having to take that Green Mile stroll, man?
I think for me, just hearing his story, like the anxiety that he was going through is like transferring over to me. Mm. Like, this is something that I'm going to have to go through. And I feel like I have 30 years of life. I've only served 11 years of that. So I'm like curious about you being like 10, 11 years into your prison sentence. Did you ever think that something like this would happen to you?
I mean, it was written that it was supposed to happen, but in all actuality, you know, when you're that far out, you don't really think about it being a possibility. You just get on with the everyday life of serving your life sentence. Mm. You don't really think about it as much. It's like what they used to say when people get a lot of time, you get a Buck Rogers date. Mm. That means it's way in the future. So something that's way in the future, you see it as the abstract. You know, like, it'll come, you know, just like Santa Claus, you know what I mean? You know, I heard he exists, but, you know, I heard that exists, but, you know, I can't see it.
Yeah, you know, what's coming up for me is the preparation process. So I know, like there's a lot of things that go into preparing for board prep, right? Relapse prevention plans, parole plans, the risk assessment, jobs, transitional housing. So there's a lot of things that go into parole prep. Like, what was that process like for you?
It was arduous. It was hard. And so it's a process. We put in a lot of man hours into preparation, just getting ready to go present yourself, you know, and you want to present yourself in the most positive light. So it's going to take more than just 15 minutes of preparation. It's years of preparation.
Mm. Nate, it's time again, man. Nate. Man, I'm feeling a lot of emotions just hearing you talk about this stuff, man, because I was here when you got the denial the other time when you went to board, and we were certain you was going home, you know? And so my question to you, Nate, is knowing that the system essentially denied you twice. They did deny you twice and said you were not suitable. Like, well, what were your thoughts? Were these thoughts coming up for you when you were sitting in that boardroom of past failures?
They not only was coming up, they were always in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. They were the 700-pound gorilla in the room. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But besides people being very optimistic about what's going to happen to me, it's always I look back in the room and there that gorilla is. You know what I mean? Yeah, he weighs a lot. You know what I mean? Because if you're ever attempted anything, if you have not been successful, you always have that particular doubt, but you can't let that overwhelm you. You have to keep going. Mm-hmm. You can't let the failures, you know what I mean, be the impediment to your success.
How long was each denial, real quick?
Well, my first denial was 5 years.
Wow.
And then after that, I got banged for 3.
Yeah.
And so it didn't feel very good at all.
Yeah.
It was deflating.
Wow.
It was humiliating, you know, on a personal level. And it's all the things that come along with not being successful.
Yeah.
But once again, I couldn't internalize it. I couldn't say that I was a failure. I couldn't say that I wasn't successful. I just had to find a way to overcome that.
Mm.
And that's why I just kept pressing on.
Yeah, man. Like, even as you're speaking right now, Nate, like, what's coming up for me, too, is that there's a certain point when, like, hoping becomes a scary thing. Like, for me, I could speak from personally that I began getting scared to hope for freedom because of all the letdowns that I've experienced in my own fight for freedom. Like, you get so close sometimes and you're like, yes, it's gonna happen, and it doesn't. What this really bringing up for me, right, is that, you know, we're talking a lot about like what we're experiencing. I know the letdowns that I've experienced. I know it killed my family. It killed them. Yeah. Like every time when they thought I was coming home and I didn't, it crushed them. I feel like they were more crushed than I was. Like, can you speak a little bit about how your family has been on this roller coaster for these three board dates for you?
Yeah, that's the two-headed monster. You know, the two-headed monster is they love you and they want you there. And to a certain extent, you want to circumvent, you know, all the pain and anguish and denials. But what I found out to be true is the resiliency, you know, of my family, because it's a sock in the stomach for them, too, when you don't come home. You know, they love you. They want you there. They want you present in their lives. You know, they know that you have value. You know what I mean? And they want the world to know you have value. However, when that doesn't happen to them, they feel worse for me than me.
I definitely hear you on that, Nate. Shakur, I know you've been denied that board a few times too, man. So I'm like, the same question to you, Shakur. Like, how did your family take it? How did y'all cope through that? Like, how were you able to, like, continue to push?
When I got on the phone and I told my fiance at the time, like, immediately she goes into tears. Some of the volunteers who I've worked with here as well, like, went into tears because they're here. They're able to see the work that we do, right, as individuals. Again, not just for the board, but for our own personal growth and development. So it definitely was a hard, experience, not only for me, but for my family as well.
I've only seen my mother cry three times in my life. And that's when they broke in our house, when her auntie died, and when her mom died. And they said my mother cried. So that kind of moved me, you know. My older sister cried and my younger sister cried. And it was kind of like a burden or relief for them. You know what I mean? That this will be coming to an end soon. You know, the pain and anguish and the absence of me being in their lives, not being present. And it made me feel good for a change, you know, to be able to reveal that news, because they were holding their breath when I called after I came back. And I called immediately, you know what I mean? Because I wanted to let them know, because they've been my biggest supporters, is my family, especially my youngest sister. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to let them know that, you know, this burden and that I've put them through, that I've caused, this pain that I've caused, is coming to an end. Mm-hmm. And we can turn the page and we can begin a new chapter in our lives.
You're listening to Uncuffed, the KALW podcast recorded and produced inside California prisons. This episode was honored as the best interview podcast in the 2022 Public Media Journalism Awards. In it, producer Nate McKinney talks with the Uncuffed guys about what it means to be granted parole after more than 20 years.
Yeah, for sure. This is Edmund again. Some of the points that you guys were making is like, they don't see us on our day-to-day walk. They don't see how much work that we put in. But they want us to articulate it in a way that they can understand what we went through. Like, I know as a man that I've changed. I'm 35 years old. When I first got incarcerated, it was early 20s. I really didn't deal with, like, any childhood trauma. Never really unpacked toxic relationships that I had, but I gained emotional intelligence. I gained this awareness. And one thing that I learned, you can walk the walk, but they don't care about that. They just want you to be able to talk it. And that's something that I didn't learn how to do. Even though I changed, I wasn't able to articulate how I changed or this arc of transformation that they talk about. Listening to both of y'all talk about, like, y'all experiences going to board, like, that's scary for me because I don't talk like Nate. Like, Nate to me is hella articulate. Like, he's able to express his emotions, what's coming up for him. He's able to unpack, like, what I see. He's able to put his trauma into words and make it relatable to someone else. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's scary. I don't know how to do that. I don't have that skill set.
You just did. You just did it. Yeah. Unbeknownst to you.
But it's also like, I think guys, I know a lot of guys have changed. That criminal thinking is gone. That's not a part of their lifestyle. What advice would you give somebody that has these insecurities, that are self-conscious about their abilities to articulate what they learned over the past 5-10 years of their incarceration? What advice would you give to them in preparing to go to board?
Authenticity, speaking the truth. Mm-hmm. Speak your truth. Don't make it a rehearsed speech. You know, don't worry about the group talk, even though we get compelled to be digressive, you know, when we get in sticky situations, but just speak what's coming from your heart and what you know to be the truth, and people will receive that.
I remember when you got that denial last time, that very last one, when you got that denial, can you talk about how that affected the people, not just your family at home, can you talk about how it affected the people incarcerated with you?
Absolutely. It could be debilitating for the whole community. It's like a tornado. It affects everybody around it. You know what I mean? It might be the epicenter. You might be in the eye, but, you know, the peripheral, things are destroyed too. And people lose hope. When they see you trying to be a beacon for your community and you don't win, they begin to give up hope. That's a very valid point you brought up, you know, and it's been overlooked until now. That point well taken.
Mm-hmm. I really want to just be in that room with you when they said, you are suitable.
When we came back on the record, I was trying my best to look calm, but my heart was pounding like an 808 kick drum. I could hear it like I was in an old-fashioned blazer with 15-inch woofers in it. That's how my heart felt. But I'm trying my best to look calm. The commissioner, she read through, you know, the formalities, and when she said that they no longer find me a risk to public safety, my hands went to my forehead, my head dropped, and the gorilla was removed from the room. I was overcome with emotions, but I was sitting there kind of in a state of suspended animation. I was numb, but it was a good numb. You know what I mean? Because it seemed like all the possibilities with things that I could do, including that what I'm going to get, including autonomy, was just on the horizon.
What people don't know is that after you go through this arduous process of going through the board, now you got to wait about 120 to 150 days for the governor to decide if he wants to let you out or not. And more often than not, he can pull your date. So you went through all of this trauma. You think you got this victory just to find out you really just lost and you got to do it all over again. You know, so I'm praying that that's not what's written in your storybooks. You done fought 3 times to get to this part. I'm hoping that you just walk right out of them gates at this point, Nate, because I think I could see you in a tweed suit.
Man, it could be made out of a burlap sack. I'm going to put it on and wear it like I just got it from Ford or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're hoping for the best, you know, and we're going to enjoy the victory right now.
Yeah. You know what? I want to speak. I want to just speak your freedom into existence right now. Nate, you going home. As a matter of fact, what we're going to do, we're going to say final parting words, right? We're going to have everybody say a little bit of something. Just saying goodbye, Nate, and how much we appreciate you because you on your way out. I don't care, man. The universe, we writing this in the stars right now. Edmund, go ahead. What you got to say to A+, man?
Nate the Great. I don't call him A+, Nate. It's Nate the Great. You're an amazing human being. I'm for sure going to miss your presence. I was kind of happy when you messed up Ton's haircut that one time. Man, I mean,
too soon, y'all. Too soon.
just serving 20 plus years in prison. Like, I just want you to have the best life. I want you to live your best life. I want you to be courageous out there, not be afraid of anything. Try new things, catch up, build relationships, mend relationships. Man, just I know you're going to do great things when you leave here, man. And I'm hella proud of you. Congratulations. Keep doing your thing, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Boy, there's Shakur, man.
Yeah, Shakur here. Yeah, Nate, one thing I want to say is just watching you go through this process, right, has been inspirational for me. I just want to congratulate you on being found suitable. And you know what? Come 120 days, we want to see you on the other side of this wall, hopefully doing an episode of Uncuffed on the other side of the wall. You feel me?
Greg, he over here being the mega super producer today. He's on his DJ Khaled, but that's still not going to help him escape from saying goodbye words to Nate, man.
Get on the mic, DJ Khaled.
Yep. This is Greg Eskridge here on engineering duties today, you know. It's been a long time, Nate. As you partake on this next journey in life, bro, just know, man, that that we love you, we care about you, bro, and you got a lot of people behind you that are rooting for you. You know, I want you to take a part of me and the rest of everybody else, man, and go out there, man, and go stand on the water on the beach somewhere and set us all free, bro.
Absolutely. Nate, man. I'm gonna miss you, man. I celebrate your freedom. I celebrate all that you are. I celebrate the chance for second chances. Like, to me, there's nothing more beautiful than a second chance at life. Like Edmund said, I know you're going to be amazing. I know it's in your genetic structure, man, to be amazing. You couldn't even stop being amazing if you were sleeping. You wake up amazing. That's just you, Nate.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm humble.
Hey,
thank you.
For those who can't see him right now, he glowing like new. Just want y'all to know that. Shine.
Because y'all been holding this in, huh? It's about time you told the truth.
Hey, we want your hands to be there.
Thank you.
Hey, what's your last thoughts, man, before we check out, man?
Well, it's been a wonderful journey. It's been a pleasurable journey for the most part. You know, we've had our disagreements, we've had our agreements, but overall, it's been like a family. And it's kind of bittersweet, you know, just to sound cliche-ish a little bit, because I know that I'm leaving behind, you know, some great relationships. But on the flip side, we're going to be able to cultivate these relationships when we all have autonomy. And it's coming for everybody, you know. You can't keep a good man down forever. And I know it's going to come to fruition, that we all going to be together and have a one great big party on the outside. But until then, my thoughts, my prayers, my hopes, and my wishes for a good and prosperous life goes out to each and every one of y'all. And I thank you for your heartfelt comments. And on that note, I'm out. Love y'all. All right.
Eric, we love, man. We love.
Oh,
that piece was brought to you from the team at Uncuffed, including Greg Eskridge, Nate McKinney, Edmund Richardson, Tommy Shakur Ross, and Tan Tran. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability. Content is approved by an information officer. You can hear more Uncuffed by subscribing to any podcast player. You can stay tuned right here for their new season dropping next week. Today's team includes Monica Gomez, Anisha Harjani, James Rollins, Gabe Graben, Shireen Adel, Victor Tentz, Shia Levitt, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Suni Khalid.